KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. With her debut feature, Marina, winning the Camera d'Or for Best First Film at Cannes last year, director Antoneta Alamat-Kusijanović may seem like an instant success. But the Croatian filmmaker says she had spent years educating and establishing herself.
Always when like something happens out of the blue and overnight, it's actually 10 years of work behind it. Everybody already knew me. People could have confirmed how I am in business. So I was already familiar to all of these people that were involved in the project.
Antoneta Alamat-Kusijanović on the path that led to her coming-of-age drama, Marina, on what it was like having Martin Scorsese come aboard as an executive producer. And on Dancing the Night Away at Cannes, even though she was 9 months pregnant and told she was going to give birth within 24 hours. But first we banter. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my guest, fellow banterer on The Business, Lucas Shaw, this week because Matt Bellany has done the unprecedented thing of taking an actual vacation where he's not even on the grid, supposedly. So welcome, Lucas. Thank you for joining.
Oh, it's great to be back.
So let's talk about The Wall. The theaters have been enjoying a bit of a run. You know, we all know that Top Gun Maverick has pulled in over $1 billion and still going. It's been a pretty nice summer for the theaters after the absolute horror of dealing with COVID. But because of various factors that are not unrelated, there is going to be a trough of movies now, pretty much until well into the fall.
Yeah, you have, you know, the last really huge movie to come out in theaters was the Thor sequel, unless you want to consider Jordan Peele's Nope, kind of the end of the summer blockbuster season. And then the next movie that I think anyone would consider a blockbuster is Black Adam, the DC Dwayne Johnson movie coming out in mid-October. Everything in between there, for the most part, is either horror or like a small comedy or drama. There are one or two family movies. There's a Brad Pitt Sony movie called Bullet Train that I'm excited about, but I don't think is going to be quite at the level of some of these other projects. And that's pretty scary for these theaters who are already sort of making do with grosses at like 30 to 40% below what they were. Now you're going to see that drop down a lot more. And these companies are still carrying a lot of debt and still sort of have uncertain futures because of the pandemic.
Yeah, well, where they are facing shortage, TV is going to have a bunch of stuff coming up for people's eyeballs. The HBO will be rolling out its Game of Thrones prequel, House of the Dragon, in the middle of August. Amazon is going to roll out the Lord of the Rings series, which has been a very high-stakes gamble, something that is very, very expensive, and there's a lot riding on it.
Yeah, it's Jeff Bezos's pet project, if you will. He's a huge fan of J.R.R. Tolkien, the author of the Lord of the Rings books, and was a driving force behind their decision to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to get the rights to make the show and hundreds of millions of dollars more to make the show and hundreds of millions of dollars more to market the show. You know, I think that the total budget could be seen at as much as $1 billion, really the first billion-dollar TV show. And I think the question, and I don't
when
know
you
how
said
you feel
the first
is,
$1 billion TV show. I just want to reiterate that, but go on.
Has how much people still love Lord of the Rings, right? There were the three movies that were the Lord of the Rings among the most successful movies of all time, and then the three Hobbit movies that were a little less successful. And Amazon is obviously banking that there's still a ton of interest in this world.
Yes. So, I mean, some years have passed since the original Lord of the Rings movies and The Hobbit, but, you know, they felt sort of defining in the moment. So we'll see if they can make this work. I will say that I thought they were clever to get Stephen Colbert sort of on board to kind of bless this with, I think he introduced it at Comic-Con.
Yeah, they've done a bunch of outreach, my understanding, is to fans and kind of experts to make sure that there's not some preemptive online backlash that they have, you know, violated the sacred texts of J.R.R. Tolkien.
I'm curious to see if they nailed that one, because I'm sure people will argue about anything on the internet. Let me turn to Luck. This is the first animated project from Skydance. David Ellison, whose company Skydance is, he took the step of hiring John Lasseter, who had been, you know, the head of Pixar and then Disney Animation, running both at a certain time. I broke the story when John Lasseter was put on what turned out to be a permanent leave. It was initially a temporary leave that became permanent because there were allegations about his conduct. At that point, it would be very tough for a public company to hire John Lasseter. I mean, he was accused of, people keep saying, inappropriate hugging, which really makes it sound very benign. But based on my reporting, this was well beyond, it was kind of groping. Women supposedly felt they had to sit in a position that people called the Lasseter, with their legs crossed and their hands down, to prevent him from getting his hands, you know, where they shouldn't be. There were multiple kinds of inappropriate behavior, not only reported by me, but then subsequently by other outlets. So at that point, I think you would agree, hard for a public company to hire him. But David Ellison doesn't run a public company.
No, he runs a private company that is bankrolled by sort of all of the money that he inherited from his very wealthy father. And someone who grew up because of his dad, Larry Ellison, who ran Oracle for a lot of his life. He was very close with Steve Jobs. So David Ellison, you know, had a relationship with Jobs and with Pixar, which Jobs co-founded, where John Lasseter worked for so long. And so I think he has an admiration for John Lasseter and connection with him that's perhaps greater than your average media executive.
Right. They've gone to some lengths to say that there is no sign of settlements at Disney. I think Disney was aware of the conduct, which is why he was instantly put on leave when we were about to release that story. The thing that's striking to me is he has never addressed this, really. He has given an interview just recently to my publication, The Hollywood Reporter, where he declines to talk about it. And, you know, it just kind of hangs out there that there's a certain amount of blowback still in the animation community. This is going to be an Apple release. We're watching David Ellison and Skydance and Apple try to finesse that. I will say this movie, as the debut film, I don't think that was John Lasseter's choice. It was sort of in the works when he got there. I think he would have been extremely happy to swap it out with the next film in the queue, which is supposed to be stronger. This movie, Luck, was well known to be in all sorts of trouble. They scrapped millions and millions and millions of dollars that had already been put into it and tried to remake it. I don't think they succeeded fully from what I'm hearing on the grapevine, and they did want to swap it, but it didn't work out. So that will be maybe not the launch that David Ellison and John Lasseter had hoped for. Thank you, Lucas.
Thanks, Kim.
That's Lucas Shaw. He runs the entertainment team at Bloomberg. Set on the coast of Croatia, Antoneta Alamat-Kuzijanović's feature debut, Marina, is a coming-of-age drama that explores the unhappy home life of rebellious teenager Julia, played by Gracia Filipović. Caught between her overbearing father, Ante, and her weak-willed mother, Nella, Julia finds freedom in swimming and diving in the blue Adriatic waters just outside her front door. When Ante's wealthy friend Javier sails to the island with his entourage, Julia's father, played by Leon Lucev, sees a chance to seal a business deal that will transform his unhappy life. At a welcome dinner, he flatters his old friend with a speech.
Javi, I just want to say how happy I am to have you here after 7 years. And I'm proud to host your friends.
Thank you.
And I'm proud that this dinner in my home is the last stop of their trip.
It's quickly clear that rather than bringing freedom to Julia and her family, Javier's presence will only inflame the tensions among them. Before directing her award-winning first feature, Antoneta Alamat-Kuzijanović did a lot of studying. She has master's degrees in filmmaking from Columbia University and the Academy of Dramatic Arts in Zagreb. Drama interested her from a very early age. So I was trying to figure out your path. You start out in Croatia acting as a kid?
Yes, you're right. I started at six. I was acting in a local theater, local professional theater. Actually, it started before because my mother would take me to theater like at the age of four, and I would like run backstage. And I remember vividly speaking to actors. I was fascinated by people transforming on stage, but I never really thought of pursuing acting in my life. That never came to my mind, but I loved just the life of theater.
Help me figure this out, because you said at in an interview, you talked about witnessing a car hitting a landmine very close to your car. And I think you were quite a little child.
Yeah, when you witnessed I was around 7 years old, somewhere around there. And my father really wanted to get a Christmas tree. And we went as a family for a field trip. It was a great day, actually, I remember. We were driving and the other car came from a opposite direction. And since it was like a little like hill roads, we had to go off road by just a few inches. And so they did. And the anti-tanks mines were just, you know, digged out off road because the tanks are usually wider than the roads in Croatia. So they hit it first. We missed it by 10 centimeters under our car. And that car fell on our car. And it was a very, I don't know, inexplicable experience.
I wonder if it affected anything that you've done since as a professional or if whether it's just a traumatic experience that you live with.
They say that people who learn from trauma are lying to themselves. And people who accept that they went through trauma are actually healed. I don't know if that's true, but I did make a movie about this. It was a short film. It was called Christmas Tree, and I made it in as my first film in school. So it's telling that this did affect me. I never finished the film. It was a very big production because, you know, I actually blew up the car and dig the ground and asphalt to really be as honest to the experience. But I never finished it. I didn't want to distribute that film for some reason. It's funny, I've never talked about this before. So you go like straight in medias res.
Sorry, I don't know whether to apologize or be feel like, that's interesting. Well, I'll take it, what can I say? So you grew up in Croatia, and I've read that you've talked about how patriarchal and sexist you found it to be. Your mom, I think, was a good role model in that she was a strong woman with a
You know,
career,
now I'm a
I
mother,
think.
And I'm thinking how my mother did everything. It's impossible. You know, she has like three or four careers and two kids. She was like really, I mean, my father as well, but my mother, like specifically, because she's the artist in the family and she really managed to wear all these different hats. And I'm fascinated.
It's quite the eye-opening experience, isn't it? When you have a baby and you say, oh my God, my mother did this?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's the only way. And I'm writing a script now that is about experience of a mother and daughter. And I don't think that I would have ever been able to give that script justice and that relationship if I was not a mother.
So just explain to me, since you have a Master of Fine Arts from Columbia, you have a master's in producing from the Academy of Dramatic Arts in Zagreb. At what point do you say, I want to be a filmmaker and I'm going to approach it by way of producing? Because that's the first phase, I think, of your career.
You mean like the path of overly educated and overly qualified? Well, I loved to be a student. I really enjoyed it. And I always worked because that kind of went hand in hand with studying. I was always doing production management and line producing on the side and was involved in theater, producing my own short films. But actually, my production and film career started with theater. I started studying theater production. And because the theater production was part of the theater and film production, I had to study film. And that was my first contact with film.
And did you say, this is the one I want to do, film? Or did it
Absolutely not. I'm like, I don't want to do this. I'm going to leave. Now I don't want to do anything with this. So I left to New York and I went, of course, I started doing a film internship because there was nothing else for me to do. And then I realized, no, I actually don't want to do it even here. So I worked for a construction company for a little bit. It was like a great money. I was already doing, you know, project management on different films. So I just like did it for a couple of months. And while I was doing that, there was a war between construction union and non-union company. They would put out the coffins like in front of the buildings and pretend that people died. And it was like very theatrical. And I thought, this is a great subject. I want to record this. I want to remember these times. And I want to make a documentary about this. So that's how I started filming. And that's how I became director, I think.
Did you end up making a short film about it? I don't think I know
I
the
did.
Answer
that's
to that.
One, another one of the films that I've never shown to general public.
Okay.
That one was better to keep for myself.
So then you want to transition into film. How do you go about that? You make this short film that the world has not yet seen or may never see.
A friend of mine has seen the film, Dylan Liner. He's seen it and he said, I think that you should really direct. And I said, yes, I've been thinking about it, but maybe I should write. So it was conversation like that. And
he's with Sony Pictures, is he not?
Yes, Sony Picture Classics. Uh-huh. And then I decided to give it a try and I started writing some things down and I met some people that went to Colombia and that's where I ended up.
So you find Gracia Filipovic, who is this remarkable young actress. I mean, did you go back to Croatia and look for a remarkable young actress who also happened to be an amazing competitive swimmer?
Exactly. That's exactly what I did. I did a little student film and Gracia was in my film. The one about landmine. She was in a car that was passing by and they stepped on the landmine. She was in the film exactly 5 seconds. And then a few years later, she was 9. And when she was 13, I did like a big general casting call. And I was mostly looking at people that were training swimming. And then I realized she's training swimming and she was just perfect. She already had a little bit of theater experience. She was striking. She was hardworking. And she had to speak very little to express what she feels inside. And that was just the right casting for Into the Blue. And after working with her, I actually decided I'm going to write a story for her. So Morina was written specifically for Graz.
Coming up after the break, Antonetta Alamat-Kusijanović explains how Martin Scorsese came aboard her debut feature, Murina, as an executive producer. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? Critics rave The Greatest Hits is a music-infused romance that hits all the right notes and the most original time travel story in years. Featuring music by Nelly Furtado, Beach House, Jamie XX, and more. Watch The Greatest Hits, now streaming on Hulu.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business and I'm Kim Masters. Murina is a coming-of-age drama set off the coast of Croatia, with hypnotizing underwater footage captured by French cinematographer Hélène Louvard. Teenager Julia feels trapped in the fishing village where she lives with her passive mother and domineering father. A visit from her parents' old friend Javier only exacerbates already simmering tensions. During one heated argument, Julia's father angrily pushes her off a boat, prompting Javier to dive in after her. The pair swim to a nearby island.
You know where I come from. If a boy swims from one island to the next, he becomes a man. Maybe we should try, huh?
I don't like when I don't know what's below me.
You need to know everything up front. You'll never get off this island.
Before she set about making Murina, director Antonetta Alamat-Kusijanović made Into the Blue, an Academy Award-nominated short film that explored some similar themes in the same island setting. Overcoming the challenges of making that short film helped Kusijanović when she set out to finance her ambitious debut feature. I'd love to hear how you put together the financing. I know, you know, sometimes there's incentives if certain amount of it is in English. Was it a big challenge to put the financing together for Murina?
Kim, did you like put down the question and say, let me ask her all the hardest question right away? No, I'm joking. No, actually, it's very hard to finance the film, especially first film. But I do have to say that because of Into the Blue, I had a very smooth road. Financing Into the Blue was a long road the short film, because it was an expensive short film, even though it looks very simple, you know, to have the kids on the rocks is complicated for safety. So that was a very big production. But because of Into the Blue, the producers from Brazil, RT Features, really loved that film. And Lorenzo Santana reached out to me and we had a meeting. And a month and a half later, they said, okay, we're going to finance your next feature. I do have to say that always when like something happens out of the blue and overnight, it's actually 10 years of work behind it. You know, I really worked like every can at different companies. Everybody already knew me. People could have confirmed how I am in business. So it was not like starting and this just followed me. So I was already familiar to all of these people that were involved in the project.
How did Martin Scorsese get involved?
So RT Features and Martin Scorsese already had collaboration that was supporting first and second time filmmakers. One of their first projects was Achambra by Jonas Cabrignano. And just about the same time, Morena was picked up to be produced within that collaboration.
Did he get involved? Did he talk to you about your project?
Yes, actually on the night that they told me, okay, we are financing Morena for sure with Marty, I was in Cannes and it was a day after I graduated.
Wow.
And I met Marty that night. I remember very well. He held my hand and he said, you are in very good hands. I felt I was in very good hands. And I think that he was very helpful in this project. I met him before I started the shoot. It felt very encouraging to know that somebody like him likes your film and believes in your vision and supports it. And then, of course, through post-production, he was there to watch several cuts. He didn't have many notes. He was very encouraging in a way where he would say, I understand these people. I know them. You know what is best to do in a film because you've spent the most time with it. You know it better than anyone else who's watching it just right now.
So having suffered with all the difficulty of making Into the Blue, you set yourself in the same location with some of the same challenges.
Actually, I set myself in a worse location at three different islands, and they're like approximately 9 hours away from each other. So that was intense company move. It was absolutely necessary to do that. And I'll tell you why. I didn't want to have trees that are green in the nature that I'm depicting. I really wanted to have bare stone and rocks. And I wanted the house to feel same. But the island where we were shooting, they did not have houses. So I found a house on another island. And that was the only bay that had an intact 16th century house without green and lush trees around it. It was only olives. And olives are like kind of gray and silver. The way the environment is around people really defines the way people are also in both in their movement and psychology and tension. So this was a necessary and almost like one of the main tools of the story.
And then you had a third island.
A third island I was shooting at because it's very interesting. Only underwater. And why? Because to shoot underwater in a natural environment, not in a pool, you really need to know not only like the way it looks underwater that you scout it, but you also need to know kind of the weather of that underwater, which is hard to detect and very expensive unless you really know that underwater. Like there could be like a mixing of cold and hot currents and then it's completely foggy and you cannot see anything. So that underwater, I knew very well because I already shot there. So that was like the least risky thing to do.
Now, your cinematographer on this film is Helene Lubart. She did Lost Daughter. She's obviously quite brilliant. How did you manage to get together?
Very easily. I sent her my film to her agent and she called me back. Helene was the most beautiful, gentle, kind, visionary collaborator, doula to this film. I could not imagine a better person to do this film with. I'm so happy I did it with her. It was a very complicated script in terms of you know, you have four main characters, basically, almost. Yeah, everything is told through the point of view of the girl, but you have four people constantly in the scene together. On the sea, under the sea, by the sea, in bathing suit, nightmare to shoot, on the sun, without the shade, a complicated mise-en-scene, all daylight, no cover sets. It was a very complicated film. And the way I like to speak and paint with camera was also not as simple at first and took us some drafts to get to the nutshell. It's almost like same like writing the script, you know, like we arrived at a place of the best possible version visually of this film through combining all the elements and working with all creative people around us. And Alain was definite master.
So you ultimately have a film that is in Cannes and wins, of course, a big prize. Tell me about, and I think you were extremely pregnant at that point. You're birthing more than one thing at a time here, as women do.
Yes, always. I really felt like that's the ultimate creation. I was able to make a film, but I was really like, okay, I'm giving life. And this is the best experience I could have while I am delivering my film to the world.
I mean, I don't know, did anybody tell you you shouldn't go to Cannes? Because I think you were very close to having this baby.
Well, I was very prepared because remember, I'm a producer. So I went to Europe 3 months before my due date. And then I organized hospitals on the way to Cannes at every 2 hours distance. I was in touch with all these doctors. So I actually had all the test results and everything preparing to deliver baby in Nice, as well as in Brescia and in Zagreb and in Dubrovnik. And I had some contacts along the way as well. But right. It totally gave me peace of mind to go to Cannes 9 months pregnant and dance all night long.
The baby had a rough night, maybe, bouncing around.
Well, I was really supposed to give birth in Cannes. And they told me, like, okay, you're going to give birth in the next 24 hours. And I came home after dancing that night. And I'm like, no, actually, I'm going to give birth in Croatia. And I entered the car and I drove all night. I don't know how to explain that. That's definitely not my intelligence decision. It was just something impulsive and something primal and something intuitive. I had to do it that way.
Biology trumps all. Something about the instinct and impulse. Yeah. You know, I just wanted to ask you briefly about Croatia. We're living in a pretty patriarchal world at this point. The United States isn't exactly distinguishing itself with progressive moves, but your film, you know, it was at Cannes and very well received, but they did not select it for the Oscar competition. Do you feel like there's something behind that or just the way the luck of the draw?
I'm very sad, of course. Not because it's Murina and it's directed by me, but I think it was a unique opportunity for my country just based on, you know, like black on white on paper, given that it was produced by Martin Scorsese, distributed by Kino Lorber, you know, won an award in Cannes, was in Toronto, won an award in Hamptons. And it was a little bit strange, I have to say, to a lot of people, including me. But to be honest, I did not have time to play Sherlock Holmes and to go into why that happened. Also, I did not have time to be really sad for too long. I had to move on because I had a new baby, I had a new project, I had a new team, I had distribution and all the festivals and things that were waiting for me. But yes, I do think that it was a little bit of missed opportunity for my country.
Well, I'm hoping and believing that they'll get another opportunity. Antoneta Alamat-Kustianovic is the director and co-writer of Murina. The film has a limited release in theaters now. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Kim. This was beautiful. I really enjoyed it.
And that's The Business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program with help this week from Matt Schwartz and Paul Smith, who mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.